I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition, actually a very special edition of Words on a Wire. I have somebody in the studio today, and I always love face-to-face conversations. I mean, not that the phone conversations are bad, but I'm sitting across from Bill Clark. And if you're thinking, well, what did he write? Well, I don't know what he wrote, but I know what he does, and that he promotes books. He is the owner, the co-owner, I suppose, of El Paso's probably only, I would imagine, independent bookstore. It's called Literarity, and it sells new and used books. You just opened it up a couple of years ago, and you know, we usually talk about specific books on this show, but I mean, if there's nobody there to sell our books, what the heck are we going to do? And so you have gathered this incredible collection of rare books and brand new books that have never been opened before. And you have used books. You have all kinds of different books in this independent bookstore in El Paso. So before I start asking you about why you were crazy enough to open up an independent bookstore, let's talk a little bit about who you are, Bill Clark, and where did you come from?
Okay, but I will tell you, it's amazing how many books you can get in 1,200 square feet.
Oh, I bet. That's it. That's interesting. So first of all, before we ask you how you came about opening up an independent bookstore, and clearly a bookstore that... Do you remember those B. Dalton bookstores they used to have in the mall?
They were
less than 1,200 feet. They were like a little hallway or a couple of hallways, and they only had Stephen King on the shelf and all these bestsellers. But you walk into your bookstore, and you see some of the best literature. You see all kinds of interesting nonfiction books. You see poetry. And most importantly, you see local authors.
Absolutely.
You see Rosa Alcala. You see Jeff Sirkin, Sasha Pimentel. You see all these local authors. And so... how did this come about? Why, you know, why did you open a bookstore? But first, again, I'm jumping ahead of myself.
Yeah.
Tell us, where did you come from?
Well, I grew up in Tennessee, near Memphis, Tennessee. So I grew up loving two things, great Southern writers and great music.
Oh, nice.
And so music and books have always been the two loves of my life. And I started my career as a journalist. And then ended up in corporate America, including about 15 years in the radio and the music industry in Los Angeles. Then I came to El Paso in 93 in a business endeavor, and I have been here ever since.
Oh, so did you know of El Paso before you came here in 93?
No, I had never been here before moving here in 93 other than for a very brief visit before moving here.
Wow.
And so came here in 93.
And then how many years ago that? Let me see. My math brain doesn't work very effectively.
25.
It's been a while.
25 years that we've been here now.
Oh, yeah, and, because I came here in 2000.
Yeah.
So you've been here all that time. And so now El Paso is your home. Tennessee isn't your home anymore. I mean, it will always be your home, but El Paso is your home.
Well, without Tennessee, guys like Davy Crockett, there wouldn't be a Texas.
There you go.
But some friends of mine and I laugh about the contributions that Tennessee made to Texas at the Alamo and different places.
Oh, really? That's funny.
But anyway, yeah, my wife, Mariana, and I started collecting books in the mid-80s when we were living in L.A., and we both grew up with a love of books, but we really started amassing books, if you will, in the mid-80s. And over the years, we've bought books one at a time, two at a time, a box at a time. And then over the past 10 years, we've actually bought complete private libraries.
Wow.
And so...
So I imagine you have a lot of books or that don't fit into the bookstore.
That's correct. We actually have a considerable number of books that do not fit in the bookstore, some of which are still in our personal collection.
Right.
And
right.
So, but yeah, the bookstore is the tip of the iceberg.
Do you have books in every room of your house?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. I always have a stack next to the bed, and typically it's a very eclectic mix because I'm one of those people who will jump from book to book.
Right.
If I'm sort of tired of reading a novel, then I may dip into a collection of short stories or into some poetry.
Yeah.
I also really, really love essays. And so from time to time, I've at least three different kinds of books going.
Wow.
And there's so many books you can just dip into without having to start at the front and read all the way to the back. And the poetry, you know, poetry is a great example of that,
right?
As are essays.
You know, that's interesting. When you walk into your bookstore and you see how the books are displayed. I'm wondering, is there some sort of organic process that leads you and your wife, your partner, to put particular books in particular areas?
Yeah, I mean, there is a little bit of method to the madness in that we do offer, as you said earlier, a combination of new and used books, mm-hmm. pre-owned books. And the new books that we offer tend to be a curated selection of books that are either by local authors mm-hmm. who we really believe in, yeah. Or they're books that people will not readily find at a Barnes right. Noble. For example, we're big supporters of world literature and translation.
Oh, that's
so
great.
We offer the full line of books from Deep Vellum in Dallas, which mm-hmm. is Literary Arts Nonprofit Press that specializes in finding great books and great authors from around the world and translating those into mm-hmm. English to make them accessible to English language readers. Mm-hmm. There's a similar press out of California, Two Lines Press, which does the same thing. We carry all of their books. And so those are books you're not readily going to find at a Barnes & Noble.
Right.
And perhaps another good example is we're now a partner bookstore with Ugly Duckling Press, which is a small literary arts press that just does really, really great books. Mm-hmm. And so our thing on new books is a curated selection of books that people will not find elsewhere. And then as it relates to so those new books tend to be featured on the center table mm-hmm. and along the window. And then they'll occasionally be mixed in with the other sections.
Right.
The back wall tends to be focused on full leather bindings,
mm-hmm.
fine bindings. The things in the glass case tend to be first editions or signed books or things that are a little bit fragile.
Right.
And we don't have space to be all things to all people. So without a doubt, while we've got some history in there, our focus tends to be literature, including poetry and essays and art, design, photography, architecture. Mm-hmm. We tend to be a little more literary and artsy.
I'm talking to Bill Clark, owner of Literarity Bookstore, independent bookstore here in El Paso that features large local writers and first editions. And it's a beautiful bookstore. And you said that you and your wife started collecting books in the 1980s. And I'm wondering about that. You said a book at a time. And I'm wondering, were you collecting books knowing you were collecting books? Or were you just reading a bunch of books and then suddenly you look on your shelves and you realize you've been collecting?
Well, it's a little bit of both. I mean, Mariana and I both have been lifelong readers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've always been surrounded by books before we were married and mm-hmm. after we were married. So there were always lots of books around. Always haunting bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
But without a doubt, in the mid-80s, when I walked into a little store in West L.A. called Vagabond Books, that mm-hmm. was the day I fell down the rabbit hole.
Vagabond Books, where was that?
It was on Westwood Boulevard, and it was a little small mom-and-pop shop.
And you fell down the rabbit hole?
Fell down the rabbit hole. I walked in and saw a little two-volume set of the Uncollected Stories of J.D. Salinger.
Wow.
And most people are familiar with J.D. Salinger's 9 stories,
right.
which was, of course, published. But J.D. Salinger wrote a lot of other short stories, Daniel, that were uh-huh. published in magazines in different places that he did not allow to be collected in book form.
Mm-hmm.
And so some unknown person or persons went out and gathered up those stories and published them, sort of the musical equivalent of a bootleg.
Right.
And so,
oh, you mean this was not authorized?
It was not authorized. It was unauthorized.
Wow.
And so,
That's exciting.
So it was like finding Dylan's bootleg tapes before wow. he and the record label decided to really release them.
How many copies did they publish and who published it?
Nobody knows. No one knows, but they're still quite scarce. And so anyway, that was when I sort of first realized that there was a thing called collecting books.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the first author who I really, really fell in love with, living writer, whose work I fell in love with, was actually a gentleman who was here at UTEP for a period of time, Raymond Carver.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And taking a creative writing course also at that time at UCLA with David Shields.
Mm-hmm.
And was focused on short stories and fell in love with Carver's work. And I really right. started focusing on collecting a lot of Carver.
Wow. And so do you have a lot of first edition?
Have a lot of his chapbooks also, wow. chapbooks, first editions. I was fortunate, feel very blessed to have spent time with him before he died on a few occasions.
Wow. And how did that come about? That's really interesting.
Actually, the first time I ever met him was at a series that was done with writers, and It was a very low, one of these things where there were limited number of tickets sold. And so you really had a chance to meet him and spend time with him. And then every time
Did you get book signs at that time?
Oh, sure, sure. And over the years, I mean, I've also attended some other signings and readings that he did.
I imagine in your collection you have a lot of signed copies.
Yeah, we've got a lot of signed copies there in the shop, too. But there are certain things in the collection, in the personal collection, that we're just not ready to turn loose of. And the Raymond Carver collection is one of those things.
Well, do you have books that you got signed by the writer that you had in your personal collection that you decided to put on the shelves in spite of the fact that they're signed?
A few.
Are some of them signed to you and your wife?
Yes. Some of them were scribed to us, and then some were just flat signed, what we call flat signed, just a signature.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. And I recently turned loose because for us, we don't have children, and so we don't pass a lot of these books on. So for
absolutely, that's what it's about, isn't
it? So for us, it's about passing these books on to other people who will enjoy them. And so we've cut loose recently some Ray Bradbury books to a few people, including a couple of people associated with UTEP, who just really, really love Ray Bradbury. And so to be able to put those books into their hands.
Into the hands of people who love them and know what they're getting.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. That's the joy
of
it. That's the joy of it. And that, and then also being able to turn people on to books. I mean, when people come in, whether they're young or whether adults who maybe feel they have gaps in their reading, and they come in and you're able to introduce them to writers that they didn't really relate to.
You know, and excuse me for sounding corny, but you know this is true. When people walk into your bookstore, you're selling love. You really are.
That's a great way of putting it.
Because, I mean, everything you have on that shelf, you know, mostly everything you collected because you loved it, and letting it go or letting it go piece by piece is, you know, it would be a lot more rooted in, I don't know, less rooted in love if towards the end of your life, you and your wife decided, you know what, we have all these beautiful books. Let's give them to a library. I mean, that would have been great. But the fact that you're sharing it now, you know, and that you're deciding book by book where it could go, it just seems really beautiful.
Oh, we have some great stories. I mean, there is about turning loose of some of the books. And so that's part of the fun of it. I mean, there was one young man who's a graduate student here at UTEP who is a real fan, just loves Julio Cortazar.
Don't tell me you have a signed copy of a Julio Cortazar.
But he walked in one day as I had just unpacked some things from our personal library, and he saw this one Cortazar book behind the glass, and he was asking me about it. And
what book? Was it still in Spanish?
It wasn't Hopscotch. It was it was an English language edition, but it wasn't Hopscotch. It was
All the Fire is the Fire.
The title's escaping me
moment.
So he comes in and he saw it, and we had talked about Cortazar on one of his earlier visits, and he said, "Oh wow, can I look at it?" And I said, "Sure." And I said, "But it hasn't been priced yet." I said, if there's a price in it, it's what I paid for it 20 years ago. And so I pulled it out. He looked at it, and he loved it. And he said, "Oh, so you paid $65 for this book?" I said, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did." And he got a big-eyed look, and he said, "So, wow, how much is it now?" And so I did a little bit of a quick look at it, and I said, "If you want it, you can have it for $35." And he said, but that's less than you paid for it. And I said, "Times change." And that's one thing. The internet has brought down prices on a lot of books. And some writers are in vogue, and they go out of vogue, and then they come back into vogue. And I said, "But if you want the book, it's yours for $35. And he said, "But that's less than you paid for it." And I said, "If you want it, it's yours." And so, but it thrilled me to be able to pass that book on to him, because he's at the stage. He's probably just short of the age of, he's a few years short of the age of when I started collecting books. And
that's a beautiful gesture, I think, also because you obviously saw something in his eyes. You saw some desire to have that book and that connection he had with Cortazar. Because if it were somebody coming in and saying, "I'm really trying to find books that I could resell," and you wouldn't have given it away for $35.
It's funny you say that, because there are a few things. We've had a nice collection of Cormac McCarthy personal, and then we also have a few signed McCarthy's mm-hmm. in the shop, and I've had dealers come in. We do have dealers come in from out of town who we don't realize they're dealers till they've been there sometimes a little while, and they'll ask about Cormac McCarthy books. Well, do you have any signed Cormac McCarthy? Sure, yeah, we do. And they express interest in them, and I go, no, I really don't want to sell them. Because dealers who come in, they're looking for a discount.
Absolutely.
If I'm going to discount a book like a Cormac McCarthy book, I'd rather discount it for one of our customers
Absolutely.
Than to discount yes. it for a dealer who's just going to turn around and resell
See,
it.
If you're not in love with this bookstore by now, you should be.
Yeah. Yeah, and those are some of the little nuances. I mean, we love other dealers. Right. We enjoy our relationships with other dealers. But I'd always rather sell it to the individual.
And also, to go back with that, you know, it's lovely what you're doing because, you know, like I said, you're selling love. But what you're also doing is you're kind of entering a phase in your life where you're giving away what you have collected and what you love so much. Not the music part. I'd like to ask about your music collection in a little bit and why you don't put that in the store. But, you know, you're taking this time in after retirement or after giving up whatever that business.
Retired? I'm working harder than I've ever worked.
Okay. Or whatever, after giving up that business and doing this now.
Yeah.
You know, but that you're just giving up a little bit at a time and seeing that it goes into the right hands. I mean, that's part of the process.
Yeah. And it is about the love. And I will tell you, you know, we've had a couple of, I think it was Alfredo Corchado, who you probably know, a local writer,
Absolutely.
Who's got our number one best-selling book of the year in
oh,
the
nice.
Shop called Homelands.
Yeah, we had
which
him on
is
the show.
Great. And, you know, it made the PBS 2018 best books list.
Right. Right, right.
And I think it was Alfredo who referred to us one day as a temple. And it is a little bit of a temple. But, you know, but it's not just about loving the books. It's also about loving the authors right. and the writers. And I'll tell you, it's been so much fun to support. I mean, you know, at this point, part of it for us is supporting authors that we really believe in.
Right,
and
right.
And you mentioned Jeff, you know, Jeff and Sasha and Rosa. People like that whose work we really love. I mean, right now I'm just in love with the Cecilia Vicuña
right,
books.
The translations.
That, yeah, the translations, right. the books that Rosa has edited and translated right. or co-translated. You know, so there's books like that. We're trying to expose people to who they, right. you know, who they're just not going to find those books at a Barnes & Noble.
Right.
And how do you browse on Amazon? How do you really browse on right. Amazon?
Mm. Right, absolutely. And if we can get back to something you referred to about making a or creating some sort of business relationship with Ugly Duckling Press and I think another press. And I know you keep Velis books in your store,
absolutely.
Which is great for that publisher, which is. You know, only maybe about 5 years old.
Yeah. They're doing some cool
started
things.
Started by ex-graduate students here at UTEP. Yeah, no, they do some great titles. Jeff's among them.
Yeah.
But it sounds like if you're having these relationships with publishers, with independent publishers, that you're not just selling books, but you're also giving the opportunity for writers to promote their books, to come to your store and to, you know, and so... Are you getting into that part of the business, too, to creating perhaps a reading series? Or?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've done probably, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, with Jeff's event, we will have probably done 10 events over the past 6 weeks. And then we've got a great event coming up in January with Octavio Solis,
who
I think you know.
Retablos,
which is just a very unique, beautifully written memoir about growing up in El Paso. It's written more as a series of short stories or vignettes as opposed to one long narrative. And
I blurbed that book.
Yeah.
It's a really fun book. Yeah. I mean, it's a good book.
Yeah.
And it's also, you know, one of the books I think that reflects El Paso in a really beautiful way.
Yeah. But yeah, we're committed to events. We've done several events, especially the past 2 months since October have just been barn burners for us. And we've had, whether it's Rosa and Sasha, Jeff, Alfredo Corchado, Philip Connors. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the names I'm mentioning are local writers, but then we've had people like Eileen Miles who
I went to that reading. It was very good.
Yeah. And Russ and Eileen read together. And then, I mean, it's amazing. When I look back, I'm reasonably proud of what we've done this year.
Yeah. Absolutely. It has definitely very quickly enhanced the literary culture.
Well, we're trying to build a community. I mean, and a key part of all the events that we do, particularly when we have two writers like when we had Russ and Sasha and Eileen, and is a conversation. And so instead of just having a reading and then taking a few questions and going into signing, what we do is we have the reading and then we have a really good conversation. And if there's two authors on the same bill, then those authors will literally sit there and have a conversation. It's like sitting in their living room, sitting in someone's living room, listening to these two authors talk and share share about their work. And then
and there's even two armchairs and they're facing each other and a little table it's, in between.
It's sort of like Lipton's In the Actor's Studio interview thing. And so we're trying to make that conversation a real core part of every event that we do.
Right. So we're talking to Bill Clark, owner of Literarity Bookstore, independent bookstore here in El Paso. And when you walk in, like I said, it's really beautiful the way you have it set up. You have the big table in the front, and then in the back you have the leather-bound editions, and then you have the – but the other thing that I found was brilliant is every shelf has – you know, it says what category it is, but it's with little Scrabble pieces. So it might say fiction in Scrabble. It might say rare volumes in Scrabble tiles. How did you come up with
that
idea?
That's a funny story because we never wanted our shop to feel like a typical retail store or even a typical bookstore or a Barnes & Noble. And there's little things like the shelf design. If you look at the design of the shelves or whether you look at things like the Scrabble tiles, we just didn't want to feel commercial. And so we spent 6 months setting up the shop and unpacking books and shelving and building out the – and about 2 weeks before we opened, we still hadn't decided how we were going to label things. And I, for years, had been collecting Scrabble tiles and had huge, huge.
You collected letters.
I collected them with the intent of using them.
There's a great metaphor right there that we can go deeply into if we wanted to.
Yeah, I had collected them with the intent of using them in collage.
Oh, my God.
And collage artwork. And it had this huge, huge jug full of them.
How many do you think you had?
It was thousands. And so about 2 weeks before we opened, we were sitting there one day and went, now we know how to do this. We'll do Scrabble tiles. Well, despite the fact that we had all those Scrabble tiles, it's not until you really start trying to spell things out that you realize just how few of certain letters there are in Scrabble sets.
Like what letter? X?
I can't remember the right off the top of my head, but there's a few of them that are really hard to come by. So we had to, despite how many we had to start begging friends to go in their attics and their basements looking for old Scrabble, Scrabble games.
And it must have been fun, the point you were ready to sit down and go through all those letters and spell out.
Well, and the trays that come in, come with sets, aren't long enough for certain things. So the young man who built our shelves actually created those custom trays for us that hold the little tiles.
That's beautiful. It's almost like alchemy, too. You're getting all these letters and you're arranging them into some meaning, you know, this big pile of energy, and you just... You kind of, that's really beautiful. It's a unique idea. And I wanted to ask you about your music. We're unfortunately going to be running out of time pretty soon. I'm getting the signal, but so much to talk about with Literarity. And I'm thinking, well, what question should I ask? Because I have so many questions. So I'm just going to go with the one that's about books. I want to ask you about the music, but I got to go with the one that's about books. And that is, what is the most valuable book that you have, whether in the store, in your personal collection, and why is it valuable? And by valuable, it could mean whatever valuable means to you.
Yeah, the two that come to mind are not in the store, but we've got, and these may not be the absolute, but I'll give you two examples. Signed, limited, numbered edition of Gabriel Garcia Marquez's Love in the Time of Cholera.
Wow.
Okay. Nice book. And then another one is a book that was done by a company called American Banknote that used to print years ago. They designed and printed all the beautiful stock certificates. That, and I don't know whether you know, but all stock certificates used to have this beautiful piece of art on them.
Oh,
and we've got a handmade, one-of-a-kind book that's literally just engraving after engraving of these beautiful pieces of art that used to appear on stock certificates.
And books that you avoid.
Yeah, there is one book in particular, and I am not a fan of banning books.
Absolutely
not. I do
not
believe
not.
In banned books, right. Okay? But there is one book that I have a very difficult time putting on our shelf, and it's Mein Kampf.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah. And so in terms of a section that, you know, that you feel sort of like unnerved by, there were some glorious things about World War II, but any books related to the Nazis and to the horrible things they did are a bad vibe for me.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've had young, and I had one young person come in the shop once and ask for a copy of Mein Kampf. And I felt compelled to ask him why he wanted to read it.
Wow.
And he said, well, I don't know. Some people were talking about it. And I said, and I wasn't sure whether he was falling under a bad influence or whatever. And I finally convinced him that maybe that really, if he wanted to read about that period, that wasn't the book for him to read.
But, oh, my God. Bill Clark, see, that is proof, further proof that your story is about love. That's awesome. And are there any books on your shelves that give off an energy that kind of you're not quite sure how to take, and so you kind of like avoid the books?
I don't think so, but
that's kind of a joke question, yeah. I guess, in a sense, because when you walk into literarity, you're walking into the possibility of just absolutely anything that has to do with the imagination, the possibility of following language, the possibility of entering into great stories and great metaphysical thought, and it's just there's so many different wormholes there. That do you and your wife, after you close the store or even before you close the store, like to walk the aisles and just kind of read tiles?
I enjoy Sundays when I come in. We're not officially open on Sundays, but except during the holidays, and I enjoy Sundays and there when it's sort of quiet and get to look around.
It's a beautiful space. You walk in immediately and you're going to feel at home, and you're going to be just so overwhelmed in a good way with all the titles. And it's Literarity Bookstore. It's in El Paso, and the address is
5411 North Mesa in Peppertree Square.
Peppertree Square. Well, Bill, thank you so much
Daniel,
for joining
thank
us
you for, thank
on
you
Words
for
on a Wire.
Having
and I know this store is going to continue to make beautiful, positive changes for our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Daniel Chacon. I'd like to thank Bill Clark for joining me on Words on a Wire. I'd like to thank our producer, Stefania Castro. And join us next week for another edition of Words on a Wire.